This week on Barbell Shrug, we interviewed John Wellborn, former pro football player and founder of CrossFit Football.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Welcome to Barbell Shrug. I'm Mike Bletzer here with Doug Larson, Chris Moore. We have CTP behind the camera. We are in Anaheim, California, secret location.
Get the wide shot, CTP, ready. Get the wide shot ready.
And then we're here to watch the games, of course, which we've done none of. And and we've just been hanging out with cool people the whole time, which is a lot of fun, actually. Hence our guest, Mr. John Wellborn.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes. You might know him from CrossFit Football, Power Athlete, Power Athlete Radio, and former professional football player.
All I know is I'm wearing black, and I must be looking lean and small as shit right now. Like, look at me sucking his tummy next to John. Like, damn.
Stand next to him. Well, all right, not, everyone knows that Chris Moore is a big guy.
Well, I'm still like 275, whatever, and I feel like a fucking munchkin. Look at this.
Hi, sir.
You said you're only 295?
Yeah.
You look way bigger than 20 pounds bigger than you.
I think it's a black t-shirt, you know? I got this free Reebok t-shirt, and it just definitely...
There was two kinds of offensive linemen. Real offensive linemen, like John, and then fat, chubby kids who try to find something to do in sport, like me, and try to make themselves an offensive lineman by eating too much. And that's the lesson here. Well, you're saying you're getting charged up right now because this is the end of July, and this is the time of year, isn't it, man?
Yeah, it's third week of July.
Yeah, John was saying he's been eating a little extra without really knowing it, and like looking at heavy ass barbells and like can't help but like throw shit around and getting like the warrior spirit up.
Yeah, no, it's such a weird compulsive habit. All of a sudden, you find yourself eating more and you want to go lift some heavier weights, and you're like, man, I think we should go out and be running sprints or maybe some conditioning. And all of a sudden, people are like, oh, yeah, the CrossFit Games. I'm like, no, third week of July, training camp.
Yeah, it's tough.
But now the third week of July is the CrossFit Games.
Yeah.
And you said you show up at the CrossFit Games, and you feel like you're big because there's so many skinny people running around.
Well, I mean, you can't be that big doing CrossFit. I mean, there's no way. I mean, it just...
you're not going to be 295.
No. Yeah. And when I competed in the Games, I was like 312. And I remember lining up and looking over.
That video is fucking epic. Of you running down the fucking mountain. Was it the, what was it?
Yeah, the Hill Sprint?
Yeah. What movie was it? They did that documentary.
Yeah.
Every second counts. And the way you just come down that mountain is, I had to laugh.
Dude,
I was
trying not to fall because I thought if I fell, I was going to hurt myself. So yeah. I was literally coming out.
And like a bowling pin, just take out all these poor sons of bitches who happen to be in your way.
I remember lining up to do it, and I look at Chris Spiel, and he's like 135 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how the fuck am I going to beat this dude in burpees and pull-ups?
Kill him.
And I was like, there can only be one, like Highlander style, maybe. But dude, like Hunger Games. But yeah, I was like, oh yeah, this CrossFit Games thing. So I didn't even really know what it was.
You didn't do it in 07. 07 was the first one?
Yeah, no, I did it in 08.
And then you did in 08, and that's the one that
got
a lot of publicity. The initial publicity of the Games kind of happened there.
Well, it was actually 3 weeks before the Games, they hit me up about making the movie.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, we want to make this movie. And I was like, oh, that sounds like a great idea. And you have to do this CrossFit Games thing. I'm like, what's that? They're like, oh, it's this competition thing in 3 weeks. I was like, oh. So I got to learn all this CrossFit stuff, huh?
Like, yeah. Oh, you hadn't been doing CrossFit up to that point?
No, I've been doing my football training. I've been training at a CrossFit gym, but all my stuff had not been CrossFit. I mean...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it looked a lot like what you see on CrossFit football, but...
Right.
I had to learn like handstand push-ups, muscle-ups, all the CrossFit-y stuff. I had 3 weeks.
You knocked all that shit out at 312? No problem.
Yeah.
Handstand push-ups?
Yeah.
And you just said...
He was right in the mix.
I was okay doing them.
Yeah, if you watch the movie, he was in the mix.
Yeah.
Except for that mountain thing.
Yeah, that fucked me. Well, I mean, yeah, dude. It was like an 800-meter run straight uphill and then straight downhill.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was
as freaky of an athlete as you are, if you're 300 pounds, at some point, like, man, this is just not in my domain at all.
That's where ego bites you in the ass. Because I was like, oh, yeah, I'll fucking win this thing. You kidding me?
Went to win?
Yeah, no.
Playing NFL, man.
Dude, I would never expect to do anything and lose. Like, if we're playing checkers, I don't care if we're playing hot hands or drinking beers, I want to win every time. So I'm not going to show up there just for a good time. And then after
that. You challenge me to an ice cream eating competition later?
Let's fucking
you
go.
Son of a bitch.
My kids are really good at eating ice cream, those little fuckers. But I finished, and I went home, and 6 days later, I left for training camp.
Oh, God. Oh, you were still playing?
Yeah.
Holy shit. I was under the assumption you had retired.
No, I was still in the fight.
Holy shit.
Oh, my
Dude,
God.
Dude, talk about fucking ego. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll fucking win this thing, and then I'll go to training camp.
Were you, like, tore up those 3 weeks, or what was the recovery like from... I mean, you obviously were surprised by how, like, difficult it was.
My training was great. Everything was perfect. I was dead on. Then all of a sudden, we changed the training for the CrossFit stuff, mm-hmm. and, like, at the end of 3 weeks, I was pretty torched.
Yeah, just from the... preparation and then the weekend.
Yeah, and then the weekend. Shit. And then about 6 days later, I got a call from Baltimore and I went out there for a tryout.
Yeah.
And then they kind of were a little funky on the money. So the money wasn't right. So I came home and the next day I signed with the Patriots.
Oh, nice. Yeah, in 2000, I mean, if you didn't join the CrossFit cult until after 2009, you might have missed the movie.
Yes.
Every second counts. Because it was real huge for about 3 months. And then
it's probably,
like,
worth going back. Online somewhere, right? Go back and find it.
I loved it. I thought it was a great little docudrama.
Well, people were also, like, tripping out because they had never seen people really eat that much, and they're like, "How much eat?" I'm like, "I don't know, like 6,000 or 7,000 calories a day." And they're like, "How many blocks is that?" I'm like, "What the fuck
is you and your blocks."
I was like, "What's a block?" And I remember them, like, blocking out my food.
It's calories counted a different way.
Yeah, exactly. It seemed way too complicated.
You're like, I have, like, typically 10 blocks of chickens a day.
I do think the first couple times I heard about you, it was always in relation to sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
It was like, John eats 12 sweet potatoes a day.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know who John is. And then, like, a week later, I heard it again. Michael's talking about it. He's like, "I want to gain weight. I'm eating more sweet potatoes like John Webber. I'll be 300 pounds before I know it."
Oh, it's easier with rice. Just put that in the cooker and eat that stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, all the paleo people freak out about the rice stuff.
So earlier you said that you can't be big and do CrossFit. Is that why you started CrossFit football? For the bigger guys? Or is it contrast to that?
No. So the way CrossFit football started was after I got hurt in the last preseason game. So I chipped off a piece of bone in my knee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw some scars down there on both knees, right?
Yeah, both knees. So I've had 5 surgeries on my right and one on my left.
Holy shit.
Yeah, no matter how genetically blessed you are, at NFL, you're a lineman. How long did you play, John?
10 years.
Yeah, your knee, something's going to break bad. I mean, it's just going to happen.
So I came home, had surgery, and I was sitting on the couch literally with my knee in, like, the CPM, which is this, like, constant motion machine, ice bags and the whole deal. And my phone rang, and it was CrossFit and Greg Glassman. Mm-hmm. He's like, "Hey, do you want to start this thing called CrossFit football?" I was like, "What the fuck is that? CrossFit's not about specializing. So now you want me to specialize?" He's like, "Oh, I think it'll be great."
Sounds like an opportunity. Let's do it.
I was like, "Yeah, well, I mean, it seemed, I mean, I was like, well, man, these people are super passionate about training." Mm-hmm. And I mean, it seemed like a good deal. So I was like, "Yeah, let's do it." So we launched the website, and that first day we had 17,000 hits.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And that's fucking huge. That's a lot of hits.
Day one. Literally launched day one, 17,000.
I think we talked about on his podcast, right? Power Athlete Radio or whatever. But you programmed that shit yourself this whole time, right? Since 2008 or whatever it was.
Yeah, I've programmed that website every single day for the last 5 years.
I did CrossFit football maybe for, I think I did it for a solid 3 or 4 months at one point. I was like, I'm just going to follow that for a while. I'm tired of programming for myself. I got stronger.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's amazing. I think it's brilliant in that... it's the first blog where it's openly acknowledging, and it's really the only secret of training. Like, here's what you want to achieve. Want to be big and powerful. All right, where are you at? And understand that if you're an amateur or a collegiate athlete or a pro, you're going to have to go about your training differently.
Yes.
And there's more variation here, and there's less here.
Aren't those actually programmed levels? Mm-hmm. You have different levels on the site?
Yeah.
It's kind of insanity to assume that somebody who's never lifted weights can make the same gains and really follow the same program that I can follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's like the amateur is like 5x5.
Yeah.
Try to increase your load 5 pounds from last week.
Yeah, it's a basic linear progression.
And then you get a pro level. Right. Yeah, a lot lower volume on the strength work.
If I could name just like one central issue that fucks people up, it's this. People are like, will chatter and yell back and forth like, "I do this and you do that. That's wrong. Well, I do West Side. I don't do that shit because that's not how you're supposed to train." Meanwhile, it's all on this gradient. People forget that everything works beautifully depending on what you need. Right?
Or and where you are in your training deal. Yeah. So, I mean, you walk in day one, your level of adaptation is so small that anything you do works. So we had there was a study years ago that talked about they took a bunch of untrained people, took them in, and they tested their 1RM leg press or leg extension, I think, which, you know.
Hardcore shit.
And then I think it was like 8 weeks of bicep curls. And then they tested their 1RM leg extension, and everybody made like a 30% gain. And it makes sense. Like, you know, people come in, and really that's where a lot of this stuff is super exciting, especially with CrossFit, because what? Most people, this is their first exposure to this style of training.
Yeah.
They come in the first 3 weeks, first 3 months, make fucking phenomenal gains. They're like crushing it. They go from being like this person that can't do anything to like, I'm going to compete in the CrossFit Games in 3 months.
Yeah.
And then for like the next 3 years, they make like this much.
Yeah.
Because they try to do whatever they did, not realizing that whatever you do when you first start works.
Yeah.
And so when I really came and it always really bothered me with programming because it's like, oh, I squat 1,000 pounds. I've been training for 20 years to do my program beginner. Or it's like, you know, you have a professional athlete. Like,
I tried that West Side shit, man. This doesn't work. Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a, and like when I looked at it, I was like, you know, you can't train a beginner day one person like you can a professional athlete or even the intermediate athlete. So it was easy to program different levels of training. And I think that's why people have gotten such good gains because they actually are training within where they should be instead of trying to like secret squirrel a program or look out and then follow their hero and not realizing right. that. Either their hero's been training for 20 years, has been on the drugs for 20 years, or is not doing that. He's just putting out a fucking program.
So yeah.
Big picture, what do those different levels look like when you're programming day to day? Like, what's your model for kind of the level one, level two, level three?
So the beginner is usually just basic linear progression. And where that really came from is Mark Ripto. I remember when I first met Rip, he kept talking about this linear progression. We talked about the physiology, and there's some cool things that happen when people start learning to lift weights. There's something called intermuscular coordination and intramuscular coordination. You start talking about reprogramming the central nervous system and efficiency and that whole deal. And it takes about anywhere from 4 to 6 months to happen. So Rip had this observation where when that was happening, you could almost just sneak weight into the body and sneak weight on the bar, and people would do it. So he told me about it. And I was like, you know, that doesn't fucking work. There's no way. So we had a kid walk through the door who was 26 years old, never lifted weights, saw the movie Bigger, Faster, Stronger, and wanted to lift weights. So he comes to our gym, and he's like, yeah, man, I want to get strong, but I'm in college. I don't have any money. I was like, can you sweep up? He's like, yeah. I was like, if you do exactly what I tell you, you can train here. If you ever fucking question anything, I'll throw you up.
I'll throw you so far and so long because I'm so huge.
So
I'm not going to really pay for that decision.
So I hand him this program.
So when John says that, it's different than if I say that to somebody. They're like, oh, okay, whatever.
No,
you say to somebody like, oh, fuck, man.
If you do what I say, just as it, you're going to be huge and strong.
So this, I mean, literally this kid, his name is Nate, and he comes in, starts the program. First day, squatted 3x5 at 165 pounds. 20 weeks later, he squatted 405. And I used to sit in my office and I had like a glass window where I could see where he was working out, and I'd sit in there and I'd be like, man, it still looks shitty. How much has he got on the bar? And I remember it looked the exact same at 165 as it did with 405.
He just said all of a sudden he was able to do it.
Yeah, he just linear progressed, add 10 pounds a week. 20 weeks later he added 200 pounds to his squat, and I mean he squatted that 365 for 5 and went for a single and he got 405.
That's actually one of the hard things we have, like when we coach people, is like, hey, just go for 5 pounds heavier than last week.
Yeah.
They want to go, I feel good, I want to do 20 pounds. I'm like, no.
Hey, you just undid your
There's no reason to be in a hurry. If I could add 5 pounds a week for the rest of my life, I'd be the strongest motherfucker on earth.
Exactly. I remember
like, Dave, just have patience.
Dave Hoff out at Westside was like, you know, I make my living on 1 to 2 pound PRs. He's like, if I can PR 1 to 2 pounds every day, I'll get where I need to go, and that dude's pretty strong.
Yeah, I tell people,
if you remember Travis Mash's episode, that's the guy who did the chain squat program.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dave is Neutron. Dave's total's over 3,000 pounds, and he only needs 3 lifts to do that. So you put the math together.
I tell people, you know, 1 kilo at a time. It's like, I don't even want to work in pounds anymore.
Yeah.
You know, just a kilo at a time, that's 2.2 pounds.
Well,
I'll be happy if I can do that once every 3 months, if I can add that to a lift.
You know, people don't realize training is about doing a little bit more tomorrow than you did today. I mean, that's all, or even more today than you did yesterday. I mean, it's like this idea, and we talk about it a lot. Whenever people kind of, you know, get run down, I'm like, it's like moving a big-ass pile of dirt. Someday you get a shovel, someday you get a spoon, but as long as I get to move a little dirt every day, I'm moving progress. Towards my goal. And I think people get, you know, they're either impatient, and it's this whole iPhone fucking internet thing, which I'm firmly convinced is a fad. The internet's like pockets and zippers. They're totally going out of style. So once we get rid of the internet, everybody will go back to what used to happen, where if you wanted to know something, you had to call somebody on the phone.
And spend time just talking with them, go to where they are, train with them for a little while, live their life for a little while, be a fucking human being for a little while.
Well, I mean, I think the internet's love for education is like 5x5.
Yeah.
If you ever want to get to the higher pro level shit, you got to go see them in person.
Yeah.
Just spend some time with them.
And if you are that person who has not made this big improvement and you've gone from squatting 175 to 190, and you're like, I'm thinking about doing small love junior squats.
Oh,
like, this,
Jesus.
Like, I just did 531 for 2 weeks, and I'm feeling pretty good and strong. Now I'm gonna switch to this. This is fucking so rampant.
This shit is
happening all the time right now. This is happening 100 times this neighborhood.
We call that the either the cafeteria CrossFitter.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, I'm going to select, you know, 1 week of Outlaw, and I'm going to hybrid it with gymnastics wad and CrossFit endurance and CrossFit football, and I'm going to create this secret sauce that in 3 weeks I'll win the CrossFit games and beat Rich Froning. And you're like, you realize that sounds like crazy person. Or the other guy, it's like, oh, I did small off for a week. I did 5-3-1 for a week. I did this and this and this. And they're like, you know, no consistency. I'm like, you know, the secret to life is consistency.
Yeah.
And I mean, just showing things. Up. Yeah. I'm just showing up every day and doing the right things and fucking being consistent.
Yeah. I think as a coach, like just when people go, oh, you want me to commit to 6 months of just what you tell me to do? I'm like, yeah. It's like, that's part of the deal.
In other words,
you have to be here for 6 months or else you won't see the results. Like, because I know you want to jump to another program. Yeah. Next month.
And then it'll be like that Mike Bledsoe doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah.
You only came in twice.
I did your program for 3 weeks and I didn't get stronger. I'm like, what the fuck? Yeah.
I'm like, you realize
I got was really tired and sore.
Oh, the joys of working with people. That's what was nice about being a professional athlete. I never had to worry about any of this stuff.
Yeah.
I was the selfish one. Coach would make me better. But, you know, I also had a deal where I was fortunate to be able to go train with the world's best.
Yeah.
And you show up and you're like, okay, this guy was the Romanian Olympic lifting coach. I'm pretty sure he knows how to get me faster.
Yeah.
Or Tom Shaw, who was, you know, trained Deion Sanders and every fast motherfucker ever run through the NFL, trained with Tom Shaw. You go and run with that dude and you're like seeing dudes run fast. You're like, I'm going to run fast through osmosis.
Yeah.
Just being
you're around it. That's just
dude, it does
culture.
Happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see what's possible and now you can do it.
Yeah.
It's the first time I saw, like, I'd been weightlifting for 6 months. Coach was like, you got to jerk faster on the, you know, under the bar. I'm like, it's as fast as I can go. You know, so I watch Kendrick Ferris jerk a bar. And I go,
oh, Jesus.
Oh, like that.
Like, exactly.
Yeah, okay, got it. Yeah. So you got to see it in person, too. Like, YouTube won't do it justice.
Yeah.
So.
That's the only reason I ever got worth a shit at anything. You got to put down your ebook for a minute and go to the place where this knowledge is coming from. Go to a place like Westside. Go watch NFL linemen jump over boxes and realize, oh, wow. And hang out with them for a little while. That's where you're going to start absorbing the lessons that really matter. It's the energy. It's the culture. It's the attitude. It's not the fact that somebody told you to do 5 sets of this as opposed to 4.5 sets of that. And that's somehow some big fucking magical difference between the two. It's got nothing. That's meaningless. It's completely meaningless, man.
Mm-hmm. You know, I remember when I got drafted to the Eagles. So day one, I show up and I'm at mini camp and I'm like third string right tackle or something. So I'm like, oh, I'm so far down on the depth chart. I really didn't think anything of it. But I remember I get down in my stance. And this first time going against, you know, NFL defensive lineman, they hike the ball and the dude just goes, shoots past me. I'm like, fuck. And I remember I walked back.
I've had that moment. I was only in college when Marcus Bell kept running by me and I had to hold a fucking Nerf football in my hand as a center. Because by the time my brain said, you're going to hike that ball, you're going to put it in a quarterback's hand and you're going to get your hands back up. And you try to hold this motherfucker, right? Okay. And as soon as my brain would like send the signal, he just knew it. And my finger would twitch. This motherfucker would be like, wow, over my back. The quarterback had to go ahead and hold the football in his hands because I couldn't get the fucking thing back there in time. This guy would already be around me and my ass would be flat on the ground. I'd be like, fucking hell, man.
Dude, it happens. And then and then what did you do?
I just stood there like an asshole, like with my ball in my hand going, what am I doing here?
For me, as the guy ran by me, I went back to ran back to the huddle and the coach looks at me and he's like, you have to move faster. I was like, okay.
Gotcha. Well,
I was like, okay. Just learn that. And then he's like, I need you to move faster. If you can't, you won't be here tomorrow.
Whoa.
And I remember being like, I need to move faster. So I ran back up
the line.
That's
motivation.
I fucking got down in my stance, and all I could think of is like, I'm going to anticipate the ball. I'm going to do whatever I can. And I got off the ball, and that was like the speed at which you play the whole time. My coach comes back. He's like, good.
It didn't take an ebook. 10 steps to moving faster. No. By Captain John Dickhead.
It was basically, you're going to get fired. You have this really cool job. We just drafted you, and you potentially could make some good money.
P.S. We're not fucking around with you.
And we're not fucking around. Get the fuck out of here. So obviously I did okay, because when I came back for the OTAs, I walked in the locker room and I was looking around. I was like, where are all those old dudes' names that were up here before? And I look up on the depth chart and my name was starting right tackle. So they cut all the old guys in front of me. And I remember saying to the coach, I'm like, oh, it was a second pick in the fourth round. He's like, yeah, we drafted you to start. And I was like, oh, motherfucker. This is gonna be.
And now you're seeing like the wisdom behind this. Yeah. Like, we were testing you, John.
Yeah.
And it turns out you passed the test.
Yeah. Now get your fucking ass out there and we're going to let you beat your head in for 10 years. So it was a good deal.
Most pro athletes don't always make the best coaches. They don't understand strength programs. They don't get deep into training. I'm just saying, yes, sir. And they just lift the weights the coach tells them, and they go about their day not thinking much about it.
Everybody do this shit like I
How
can?
Did you kind of obtain this knowledge?
That's the same reason I don't coach football.
So yeah.
Early on, after I retired, or even fairly early in my NFL career, there were a couple situations where they were like, hey, you know, will you help this guy? And I remember showing people things and being like, I want you to do this. And even the young guys coming in, and then my coach being like, saying to those guys, don't do what John does. So I had a certain ability, which was, and this is offensive lineman, you know, you don't lunge.
Yeah.
Right? So as you set back as an offensive lineman, as you go to punch, the last thing you ever want to do is lunge and use your head, because then the guy shoots past you.
They just know when that happens.
So I was one of the only people that could lunge and shoot my head and never be off balance. So as a guy would be coming at me, I could time my head in my hands and actually lunge at him. And even if he shot me, I could get back. So it was one of those weird something in my technique that I could uniquely do. And so when guys would see me do it, they'd be like, oh, show me that. And my coach would be like, don't show anybody that. You're the only person I've ever seen do that. And there were things that other guys could do, like Will Shields, who I played with, could do unbelievable shit that I couldn't do. But that was my deal. And so I had a certain skill set because of hand speed and all this other stuff that I could do. So when I went out to go work with other offensive linemen, I'd be like, oh, I want you to do this and this. And they couldn't do it. I'd be like, why the fuck can't you do this? And it was seemed natural to me, whereas the training stuff always made sense.
Yeah,
I always, you know, was fortunate to train with some really sharp people, understood it, and always asked questions. And so when people asked me about getting strong or getting fast or increasing performance, those were things that always made sense. Playing football, there was no way I had the patience to teach that shit. Because I, you know, and even teaching basic footwork or hand stuff, I mean, putting guys through it and not having them be able to do it, I just got frustrated and being like, why can't, you know, just watch. Do it like this. And then when they couldn't
watch
do
me
it.
As I just put my hands through this guy's chest. Boom. Yeah. Do that. Do it like that.
Well, I mean, as a kid, I had visions of being a professional boxer.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, speed bag fighting. I mean, that was what my deal was. And I remember I was fairly young when I remember a bigger kid hit me and I was like, oh, fuck, I'm going to play football. So all
it's so much easier.
So you have... You had incredible hand speeds. That's what a natural gift.
So the hand speed stuff, I mean, you know, you can talk to whoever you want, but I mean, Strahan, all these guys were always like, dude, your hands were some of the fastest we'd ever seen. I mean, your ability to get from point A to point B and be able to strike those things, use your
head.
And
Michael Strahan was a fucking freak, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, no, I mean, Stray, I mean, all these guys, you know, my first started guard, my second year was against Leon Litt.
Oh, shit, man.
I played against a big cat and shut a, you know, had a shutout against him. I mean, you name it, I played against
him. Who was the toughest, most fearsome fucking guy you ever faced in the NFL?
There was a guy named Keith Hamilton that was a defensive lineman for the New York Giants that you probably never heard of, but was probably one of the scariest individuals I played against. And he was so strong that he actually let you used to punch him as hard as you can. I'd lock him down like this, and he would just give me his chest, and as he took the blow, he would take these massive hands, and he would forklift. So we called his move the forklift. He would take your hands, lift them off, lift them above your head, and throw you back into the quarterback. And it was like the most fearsome move. We called it the forklift. So we actually developed drills to try to teach guys to counteract the forklift.
It's like a real life WWF. Yeah. Like, this is his fucking finishing move. You know what's coming. You can't stop him. Think about it, man, because John's a guy. What did you bench? How strong were these arms when you were playing in the NFL?
I mean, I benched like 5 1/4.
Yeah, yeah. Not training the bench. Just I do some bench pressing during the week because this supports my ability to use my arms. Not trying to bench a lot. This is just my default strength level. And you're on edge, fight or flight, fucking millions of people watching, millions of bucks on the line. And this guy, against your will, just moves your arms off of him. You know?
But he did this move for years to people. I mean, Doug Brzezinski, who was a guard for us, he literally lifted Doug clean, like grabbed his hands, lifted Doug, and Doug's feet were like... like fluttering in the air, and threw him past the quarterback and like grabbed Donovan and was like,
yeah, that's one of those things people watch football and they look at a line and go, those fat guys, they're going to jump off. You don't understand what's going on down on that line of scrimmage when these two forces of man meet over the ball and everybody gets down and makes eye contact and it's like a sumo moment. It's just, you're waiting for the first muscle to flinch. Like these defensive linemen are fucking on twitch. They're 300 pounds.
Well, and they're not
massively
very smart,
fast.
And they're not smart.
They're just like this giant, like, this giant like Wolverine
morons.
Creatures, right?
Yeah, they're morons.
And you're laid back trying to be all zen, like, right, I know what I got to do. This motherfucker's going to fire like a cannon. I'm just going to move my hands quick. And 3, 2, 1, go. And this is massive violence.
Oh, that calmness never existed. It was like the type of fucking focus where you're like, I'm going to fucking cut this dude in the throat. I'm going to kill him right now. You know, like we played with that type of intensity. I mean, dude, I took a helmet to the leg or actually, yeah, from our running back, the open season opener, I think it was my third or fourth year against the Titans. So I break my leg clean in half, fibula broken. They casted me 5 days, and I played 3 weeks later because you don't need a broken – you don't need that bone to play football. It's only 12% weight bearing. So I played 17 weeks with this fucking broken leg. And the first game back, I go play Sunday night, or it was a Monday night game against Warren Sapp, and ended up doing pretty good and ended up being on Madden's horse trailer and making player of the game for that. So a pitch to shut out with a broken leg against that fat ass. And the best is, years later, it's still 10 years later, he'll still try to talk shit on me.
It just never ends.
Oh, yeah, like out of nowhere, like I'll see something like...
Well, now you're on Barbell Shrug. You get the last laugh.
Oh, yeah, well, like something will come through ESPN and it'll be like my name where like Warren Sapp was like, yeah, and like motherfuckers like John Wellborn. And I'm like, I am so in his fat head. He's just driving around like, that motherfucker, if I see him, I'm going to hit him with my car. I couldn't beat him.
Oh, shit, man.
So, no, I always had a hard head and big punch, and so I was had the ability to be able to use both of those like a weapon.
Yeah,
and
so that's obviously the advanced level of sport. We talked earlier about like how the first thing is first. To get to that, you got to just put in some repetitions with a barbell to try to get strong and build a foundation. Somebody who wants to sort of transcend, John, and get to where you're at, what are the key things to keep in mind as you progress sort of in this intermediate phase? Like a lot of people listening to the show, they put in some time. They do want to get strong as shit. What should they keep in mind, man? Like, what tricks should they start pulling off the shelf to help themselves get really strong?
Find out after this break.
All right.
Oh, it's a tease. Oh, I set the tease.
Well, it's
we're taking a break. We'll come back in a second.
No problem. Shit.
Thanks a lot, CTP.
This is Andrea Ager, and you're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Barbell Shrug is brought to you by you. To learn more about how you can support the show, go to barbellshrug.com and sign up for the newsletter.
And we're back.
That was a brief studio break.
The magic of radio.
So the way we were talking about is, how do you know you're in that intermediate phase and what's the deal with it? The problem that people get fucked up with is they want to do the same thing they did before when it was easy. Mm-hmm. So when you first start lifting weights, it's easy. Add weight to the bar. You come in, everything's easy. Then all of a sudden that shit stops and things get hard. And they're like, but can I just go back to when it was easy? And you're like, no, it has to get harder. And so you either have an option. You know, when you get past that intermediate or that beginner phase, you either create more central nervous system efficiency, or you put on some hypertrophy. And I know for you guys, the word hypertrophy is kind of a dirty word.
No,
we're all about hypertrophy.
That was sarcasm. But
you're not good at the sarcasm thing.
I was going, no, John, no, we're with you. We agree with you.
Everything's just totally same deal. I'm like, yeah, this hypertrophy thing's a fucking waste of time. But I mean, for years, we've taught so many seminars where I get up and we start talking basic physiology and hypertrophy, and people are like, you know, like hypertrophy is this dirty word in CrossFit.
I don't want to be a bodybuilder.
And you're like, no, it's increased.
I guess it is.
Well, yeah. I mean, nobody wants to admit that they want to increase the cross-sectional size of a muscle, but they all secretly fucking want to.
Yeah.
And like, I just want really big biceps.
I just want to get huge, bro.
Yeah, there's like, I just want to be jacked. I mean, Rich Froning weighs, what, like 400 pounds? I'm like, no, he's like 185. So we talk about, you know, you get in that intermediate phase, you either increase central nervous system efficiency or you fucking increase hypertrophy, or you do both. And I think they don't always understand where hypertrophy is found and how you get there, and there's different types. And you know, you also got to lift some heavy weights. Dr. Romanoff, who teaches the post stuff, is a Russian sports scientist, University of Moscow, Eastern Bloc. So whenever I get to see Doc, I'm
awesome,
like,
Russian accent.
Oh yeah, he's like, John, great to see you. I'm like, Doc, how's it going? And we always get to wrap. I mean, we've gone to lunch and he always gives me these little tidbit stories. And my most favorite one, we tell it at the seminar all the time, is they took like 20 years of every program that every one of their sports scientists had ever written for any of their professional Olympic high level athletes. They took every program and they submitted it to this research group. And for like 5 or 6 years, they had all these researchers going over, pouring over every periodization, every microcycle, rep, count, volume, tonnage, all these different matrix. And they hoped by the end that there'd be like this master program would be like
Soviet Union crush competition.
Yeah, basically this is the pinnacle of training. And out of nowhere, and the crazy thing is that all the information spit out, they looked at it and they were like,
Zumba.
That is probably the truth. So all the information spits out, they look at it and they're like, fuck. The only thing that they could deduce from all this is the strongest people in the world lifted the heaviest weights in training, and the fastest people in the world ran the fastest in training. There was no consistent set rep. There was no consistent tonnage, volume, training frequency, nothing. It's just the fastest people ran the fastest in training, and and the strongest people lifted the heaviest weights. So he tells me this story, and then he sits back, and we're like drinking coffee. I was like, yeah, well, that fucking makes sense. So I'm driving home in the car, and all of a sudden I almost crashed from like the brain bomb going off. I was like, the strongest people lift the heaviest weights and the fastest people run the fastest? No fucking way! And that was like, at the end of the day, you know, and then you know, and then you look at all these programs and they're like, oh, you know, I work out at 60% and I do dynamic. And you're like, the fastest people run the fastest, strongest people lift the heaviest weights. If I don't see you lifting heavy weights, I don't give a fuck how you ramp up the volume, the tonnage, dynamic, take off 10%, do this. No, fucking lift heavy weights.
And I guess that's in that context, in that lens, when you go, why does something, this is one example, it's why does something like Westside work? You go into a room. One day you're going to try to lift the as much weight as you can against other guys who are viciously strong.
You guys have all been to Westside, right?
Yeah, I spent years training there too. Yeah, just soaking it up.
I went out to Westside and was out there for a month and ate 3 meals a day for 17 straight days with Louis.
It's the best thing ever. Isn't it?
Bob Evans and then some terrible
Evans.
Fucking
of course, Bob Evans.
Chinese place, his Mongolian barbecue, and then we went to some dinner place. And I remember by the end of it, like, you know, Louis is just fucking completely Louis you and just gives you Louis-ese. And by the end of 17 days, I was like, I speak Louis. And, you know, and the other one that was huge after he told me, he's like, well, the only reason we went to the dynamic method was because we couldn't handle 2 max efforts a week.
Yeah.
Like, and
we can practice the skills and we can try as hard as we can at something, but it need not be heavy.
Well, yeah. And he's like, you know, if we could do 4 max efforts a week, that's the best way to get strong. If you go read Zadiskorsky stuff, that's what it says. Max effort's the best. We just couldn't handle the tonnage because the tonnage was so big and they figured out accommodated resistance. He basically figured out that program because they were imploding people.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, so if you did 2 max efforts, you'd be stronger? He's like, oh, of course.
But no, I actually had a guy come up to me last week at USA Weightlifting Nationals. And he's like, what's with the dynamic effort, whatever? And I was like, I don't know. And he's talking about, people are going to get hurt doing that stuff. I'm like, actually, dynamic effort day is really fucking easy.
Well, if you think
like,
about
as far
it,
as like,
well, have you realized Olympic lifting is all dynamic effort?
Well, yeah. like you when you snatch and clean and jerk, it's dynamic.
And those guys
to
are training.
Squat, but
people,
yeah.
People forget about Louis. To your point, if we could train 5 times a week max effort, we would. Louis actually doesn't have the world's best talent. These are just fucking dudes who grew up most of the years that Westside Barbell's been in existence. He just took normal fucking truck driver dudes and dudes working fucking...
Yeah, they were
security
like
guards at strip
and
clubs
shit.
And they were prison guards. Chuck Vogelpool is like a prison guard.
Well,
you don't want to fuck with that guy. He's a particularly intense prison guard. But these are normal guys who aren't genetically blessed.
Yeah, but the Westside culture and really when you go into there, you just instantly fucking get competitive. Like you walk in and you see these dudes all tatted up with Westside, the fucking gangster rap going loud. And you walk in and you're like, oh, this reminds me of an NFL team or prison.
Yeah,
and you're like, I'm probably going to get shanked in the bathroom, and I'm going to definitely have to fight my way out. So I better get underneath this fucking bar.
Yeah, I mean, I was a good example. Somebody who was not just I was okay, better than a lot of that guy just sitting around doing nothing genetically wise, I guess. But I had no particular skill set that would make me somehow able to withstand that training. I didn't take drugs. I wasn't particularly fast. My mechanics weren't great. And all that, but I squatted 975 pounds and I trained Westside and I just listened to what he had to say and kind of tweaked it for me. I said, you're right. I probably shouldn't try to squat heavy too often. I should probably work on my speed. I should probably, instead of doing sets of 5 and a deadlift over and over again and aggravating my old lumbar disc injuries from football, maybe I should try speed and then build up the rest of my body with back raises and glute ham raises. That formula, guess what? It fucking worked. Yeah. It worked.
No, I mean, it comes down to that deal. Like, you got to lift heavy weights. You know, you got to try to move as fast as you can. We've seen this real big, it's almost a little depressing, this huge cross-section of people. When we watch them train, they just move so slow. And then people are like, oh, you know, why am I really struggling with my strength? I'm like, you lift like old people fuck. Slow and careful.
This is going to be on a quote.
And yeah.
This is going to be a tweet pick quote right here. You lift like slow people fuck.
BarbellShrug.com. Like old people. I mean, and you guys watch it. I mean, you see people, you know, we have people within our system send in videos and they're like, what do you think? I'm like, it looks real slow. They're like, how do I speed that up? I'm like, you just have to move faster. Do you want to call my old offensive line coach? You know, and then you start talking about like compensatory acceleration and Dr. Hatfield and you get into this whole deal. And I'm like, you know, when you get to a point where the bar is in a mechanical advantage, you need to accelerate that bar and try to drive that thing off. You watch, Eric Lillibridge, you know, when he's warming up, that guy, you know, squats 900 like it's nothing. I mean, he's shooting the bar off his back. I mean, those guys all are so good with acceleration. And I think that's really what separates people. And I think that's where they really start to struggle. They don't understand that you have to be just not lifting the weights. You have to try to accelerate those things. And really, that was huge. I mean, the old powerlifter I trained with as a young kid when I was 14, he and Hatfield were good friends. So he, George Zangas, who trained me in high school, invented knee wraps in the super suit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he had marathon suit wraps and suits. Wow. So he had the patent on all those. And so he was the only one that could make them.
Yeah.
So all these old powerlifters would
show up. I had
a
marathon suit one time. I squeezed myself into that like 300 pounds of warm room temperature sausage into the casing. So it was really a messy scene, man.
So yeah, we trained in Zangus' garage. And all these old powerlifters like Kaz and these guys would show up. And you'd be like, these guys are so fucking big. I mean, they're just massive people. They'd have like a trunk full of food in their car and throw it up at blenders. And their whole deal was like, everything you do has to be max acceleration. When you pull that bar off, if it's 225 and you can deadlift 1,000, you pull that sucker like you deadlifted 1,000.
Yeah, that's why speed pulling is such, I can say, the most potent way to get strong I ever found for me was that I was going to load a bar with 400 to 500 pounds. I was, at the time, I was pulling like 7. And I would say, okay, I'm primed, I'm ready, I'm going to rip that off the ground as fast as possible, 10 to 20 pounds, rapid fire. I'm going to rip it, I'm going to drop it, I'm going to walk back, I'm going to lightly chalk my hands, I'm going to walk back up, I'm going to fucking rip it. 30 seconds on, off, everything I've got.
Sounds like a football play.
Yeah, turn up the West Side Connection as loud as I can fucking get this shit right now. I'm going to rip that fucking bar off the ground, and then I would see other people going, yeah, my deadlift won't move. Like, well, you're doing the slowest fucking set of five. Fives are good, but you're training yourself to move, you know, 70% of your max as slow as possible. What the fuck is that going to do for you, man? So what's going to do is make your back really tired. Well, you slower, you know?
I mean, it's a deal, too. And we were saying, that sounds just like football. I remember when I went out there to train with Louis, he's like, oh, these will be like football plays. We're going to do some doubles and bands. And we went through the whole deal. He's like, 45 seconds. We're just going to keep shotgunning them. I don't want you to go out and do this and this. And he's like, it's how we train our football players. I'm like, sounds a lot like football. And he's like, yeah, and it really works for powerlifters, too. I'm like, so what you're saying is basic capacity, the ability to suffer through some stuff really helps. He's like, yeah. I'm like, oh.
And people always will talk shit. I mean, I get really defensive just to defend Westside only because I'm seeing people not think shit through. Like, that shit doesn't work for raw lifters or for crossers. Like, well, yeah.
No, everything
but these
works.
So just bring your stance in a little bit and don't sit back as far. And don't use quite as much band tension if you're just a CrossFitter or you're a guy who wants to squat without suit on. But you can still do speed squats. What the fuck is wrong with speed squats? Like, speed squats won't magically work for you for some fucking reason. Like, moving a sub-max weight as fast as possible won't make you a better squatter. No, you just don't have to do everything that Dave Hoff might be doing. But understand that he's been powerlifting for fucking 15 years.
Well, I think he squatted 800 when he was 15.
Yeah.
And I remember because when I talked to Louis.
Don't argue with these fucking results, man.
Well, I remember
talking. Well, it doesn't matter what he did. Well, if you're squatting that's a genetic thing.
But something is in there that works. You can bring your stance in and tone back, but still get the benefit of an idea.
No, I mean, the system works. Yeah. I mean, but there's other systems. I mean, I was reading Sam Bird, who's generally accepted to be the best squatter ever.
Yeah.
You know, holds world records in 5 different weight classes.
We trained him a little bit in Memphis, Sam.
Yeah, he trained with us for a while.
Yeah, that guy's a beast.
Yeah.
And that guy's never done dynamic work.
Yeah.
And uses no chains, no bands, no boxes.
I was actually shocked to hear that. You know, like, I was like, he's like, nah, just a barbell. Yeah. So you use specialty bars a lot? He's like,
No.
I'm like, so you just squat weights?
Yeah.
And you're like the best squatter in the world. Okay.
Yeah. And he uses like Prilipin's table, and he's like, yeah, you know, I squatted a grand, but I only use 60% of my 1RM, so I'll squat it like, base everything off of 600 pounds, and I'll squat over 450 pounds. And I remember like hearing that and being like, so wait a minute, you just do all your, you know, he does, you know, threes, fours, fives within his percentage. Everything's, you know, this dynamic compensatory acceleration. And then you load up your suit and you squat a grand. Fucking amazing.
Yeah. Now, I mean, he did not squat heavy because his thing was he was so strong that if he tried to squat heavy every week, he would just wear himself down too much.
Well,
too quick.
I think now that he's doing more raw stuff, I know he's doing more heavier, you know, heavy high-end stuff. Mm. But I think, you know, as you know, dude, the suits and the bands and, you know, the wraps and all that shit just destroys you. It beats you up. That's why, you know, Louis and them went to one max effort, and that's why they rotate the deadlift, the good morning, and the squat. They only squat max effort once every 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Because that shit will fucking implode you. I remember the first time I put on a set of briefs and we were working up on stuff. I took a free squat with like 800 pounds and I got to the bottom and the pressure got so tight that I stood up and I almost threw the bar off my back.
And
it was literally the guys were like, that was the fastest fucking squat. I'm like, and I broke all the blood vessels in my face and my neck and my eyes.
Yeah, it happens.
And I remember my training partners almost shit themselves because they were like, there's like, what if you get to the bottom? We can't help you. I'm like, don't worry. It's not going to happen. So I get under the weight and I stood up and the bar shot off my back and they were like, oh, and they all kind of ran. And
where is this at?
This was at my gym.
Oh, okay. So you're not like at Westside with a bunch. Okay.
No. I was with my training partners who I think the strongest one squatted 400 pounds.
So they're not. Okay. Yeah.
I remember
just trying to get some context about this whole scenario.
So I remember we were like one time we were benching and I think I had like 5-something on the bar and I remember my training partner being like, I don't deadlift 500 pounds, so you better get this shit. I'm like, don't worry about it. I'll be fine.
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
So,
I mean, do you have a hard time finding people that are, I mean, I like to train with people who are stronger than me. That's got to be really fucking tough for you.
Yeah, that's why it was so much fun to go out to Westside.
Yeah.
And when you find people. But, you know, as you guys know, I mean, you have such a crazy schedule and you guys are pretty good. So I either have to bring my guys in and get them to that position. But we, you know, we travel so much for seminars and there's tougher consistency. So I got a pretty good group of guys that want to train hard. But in terms of like monster lifters, I need to find those guys and bring them out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I sold my gym just because owning a CrossFit was just way too time consuming for what I needed to do. And now I have my own little private place. And it's great. I show up and my stuff's exactly where I put it when I left it. nobody breaks anything. I can buy nice feeling. Things.
And no one's constantly going to ask you questions and ask like, what am I doing? What is this? This and that?
Yeah, that's just on the internet. You can turn that shit off.
Yeah.
But it's, it's been great. I mean, we really, you know, my training is really cyclical and it was really great. And then I had kids and that fucked it up. So
everybody says.
I have twin little girls and I don't know if anybody out there has twins. But it was like, you know, they're almost three now and it completely wrecked shit. Like, I'll be able to get like 3 or 4 good months in and then something will fucking happen. And then it's like,
I've got a 2.5-year-old and my daughter who's just born in April. She's like 3 months old now.
Oh,
she's
congratulations.
Thanks, man. She's with us out here. But yeah, it's hard to communicate how much things change all over the place when that happens. Just the fact that how can you like zero in and really give all your training when the scope of what you want out of life changes. I mean, it's hard to give the energy to it too.
When I played, I was not married, had no kids, and I didn't want to get married or have kids because I was way too selfish. I just wanted to be really good at football, and all I just wanted to do was train, and I didn't want to have any other constraints other than to be able to do my job the best I can.
Do you think that's necessary?
Yeah, I think where guys fuck themselves up, and I know there's guys that can do it, that can have kids and wives. I just knew I couldn't, and I was like, you know what? There's no way that I'll be able to be this selfish an individual. You know, because I mean, it's true. I would wake up in the morning, I'd eat, I'd go train, I'd come home and take a nap, I'd go back to the gym, I'd eat again, and I would go to bed. And then on the weekends, I'd like go to Vegas or go fucking party my ass off. And then, you know, I can imagine like having that life, you know, with a wife and kids and being like, oh, we got to pick the kids up at 3. I'd be like, 3 o'clock, that's my fourth meal. And then I got to train at 5.
This is not going to work.
Like,
for me,
yeah,
babe.
This isn't going to work.
It's not working.
So,
yeah.
Or, you know, and so I think that's what I needed to do to be good at my job. And I realized that. So whenever I thought about it, I was like, you know, I don't think I can conducively or, you know, have a conducive, you know, relationship and not end up divorced in like a week and still do my job. So when I retired, you know, thank God I met my wife and we got married and had kids. And I also laughed that in the NFL, you don't always get to meet, like you meet the girls you want to, not the girls you should. So like I met some really, really killer girls, but like they weren't girls technically you would want to marry. So my wife's got an MBA. She's super smart, like had a great job and was, you know, really, you know, nice girl. And I would have never met her when I was playing the NFL.
Can she, is she capable of keeping you in your place? She crack the whip and make you do what she wants you to do?
I don't really need much whip cracking, but I'm kind of a dumbass too sometimes. but you know, every guy is. And that's why there's women that are way smarter than us that attach to us. And then she's like, oh, hey, you got to remember to pick that shit up. I'm like, pick up what? You know? But no, I mean, as you know, playing professional sports, that's an interesting breed of woman that you kind of run into.
Yeah, this is a professional sport we're playing right now, this podcast thing.
I'm sure. I am sure the bar.
We can't keep them away, dude.
I am sure the barbell shrug groupies are dense and thick.
Yeah, let's not let our wives hear this conversation. No, but it's amazing. I was just thinking what you're saying. I'd hate to be the poor son of a bitch that comes down to the Wellborn house to ask your 15-year-old daughter, one of them, like you open a door, I'm like, holy shit.
I hope by that time I got like Born to Kill somewhere tattooed on me. You know, show up and then guy be like, is your dad in prison? No, he played in the NFL and he's totally fucking crazy.
I think you're still pretty big, just giant, like just grizzly Adams gray masculine beard, which is fucking intensely shaped, and you just like, hey, welcome to my home, why are you here? Can I make you an offer on some land? So I'm not here to date your daughter or anything but that, sir. I'm backing away slowly.
Yeah, you know what though, you would hope a kid would be that respectful, but they're not. Little fucking shithead probably trying to like sneak in the back door or something. Like our next door neighbor, he and his wife are, you know, obviously have like, I think she's like 14 or 15-year-old daughter.
Oh, geez.
And so I was sitting in my office and I can see like at the front of their house, and I see her like get dropped off and her friend, and then I see this like car drive around, they park, and then I can see this boy coming back, and he's like hops the fence. I'm like texting my neighbor, I'm like, dude, I just spotted your daughter sneaking some dude in the back of your house. Literally like 2 minutes later, I see the kid jump the fence and go running. And I remember he was like, thank you so much. I'm like, dude, we got to look out because it was probably going to happen to me. So I'm going to put in good karma with you.
Right. Reciprocation, homie. Keep an eye out from my backyard.
Yeah. And then he was funny. He's like, you know, if shit ever gets down, can I come get you? I'm like, please. If some fucking asshole kid is rude to you and like gets into trouble, just come knock on my door. I would gladly straighten that shit up.
Oh, God.
You haven't bulldozed anybody in a while. No. You got to hit somebody every once in a while to keep yourself straight, right?
Yeah, the problem is then you got to give them money, and money's too hard to give. It's tough to work, you know? As gratifying as it would be to be able to, you know, lay into somebody, then you got to, like, write them a check, and you're like, motherfucker.
I'm sorry I train wrecked you. Here's $1,000. Okay, yeah. 10. What does it take to make this problem go away now?
Yeah, I mean, you got to give somebody, like, 100 grand if your dog bites them, let alone let you punch them.
Or throw them through a fucking wall with a chest thump.
But, I mean, back in the day, that was kind of, you know, more acceptable. Now people are like, oh, I'm going to sue the internet. You know?
Did you ever have a moment?
I found you on the internet. I mean, like, you guys go out to a bar, you cause trouble. Next thing you know, they're like, fucking Google you and find you on the internet. You're like, God damn it.
Did you have a great moment where you just totally, like, Patrick Swayze Roadhouse some asshole and just threw him out of a fucking room? Like, when you're playing?
Yeah, you've had to been involved in some epic fight, bar fight.
I'm sure
or something.
Enough time has gone by, John. Legally, you can talk about
it. I was going to say, I cannot confirm or deny anything, but I did hear a story once that we were at a concert. And one of my good friends, who shall not be named, was at a concert, and we were there, and he wanted to see the show from the ground and from the deal. And I remember being like, dude, if we stand here, the pit's going to open up here. And he's like, no, dude. Everybody told me the pit's going to open up in the front. I'm like,
oh, no.
I fucking promise you it's going to open right here. He's like, no. I'm like, all right. So all of a sudden,
dude, if I saw you across from me in the pit.
The lights drop, and like it gets real silent, and all of a sudden the curtains drop, and the bit, bah! And I take this kid and literally threw this kid across, and the pit opened up right in front of us. And he was like, oh, you might. I'm like, yeah, I told you it was going to open up because I was going to start it. So, yeah, but we had there was a good time. But for the most part, man, people always know who you are, and the last thing you want to do is go ahead and hit somebody. I mean, it'd be obviously bad to hurt them, but also you end up getting sued for that stuff.
Like, so, like with MMA guys, I guess you never quite know. You're talking to a guy in the bar, he's really nice. He looks like a, you know, just your average 30-year-old guy sipping a beer. Meanwhile, you never know, this is a dangerous motherfucker in the world. But fortunately for you, if I walk up to you in a bar, go, something tells me I shouldn't fuck with this guy.
You know, though, it's I always get like more of the smart ass dudes, and you're always like, man, I really don't want to shake this dude's hand for the 50th time. You know that one. I'm sure you guys get, you know, like, dude, stop shaking my fucking hand.
They're like blacked out drunk. Or, like, they tell you the same thing five times.
Oh, did you play football, man?
We were in Vegas, and I walked
I've
in.
Probably been that guy before. That's the thing. Dude, you can't blame him.
We were in Vegas, and we walked in. This guy's like, hey, you're a big guy. And the guy slapped me, like, square on the back, like, between my shoulder blades. And I was like, cool, like, knocked me out. Or I kind of turned around. And at the time, my buddy had given me these rings. And I went, oh, yeah. Wham! I hit the guy on both of his shoulders, and the guy literally like crumbled, like you know, just poof, like hit the ground. And I was like, oh, and I just walked away real fast. I don't know what happened to that guy. Hopefully, he was okay.
Was it a cartoon or something? A guy like takes his fist, like hits the guy, and the guy's neck disappears. Like, crank. And he has like take it and stretch it back out like dramatically. It's part of him. Slap the guy on the fucking shoulders.
Dude, that was a great thing about playing football. Is any anger or like bad day or anything that you wanted to take out, you could totally just strap it up and be like, you know what, I'm gonna go out and fuck somebody up today. And then the great part is they'd be like, that was a great practice, you played amazing, here you get a pay raise. And you're like, oh, this is fucking great, I can go out and fucking hit people. And then you retire and you're like, man, I don't get to beat people up anymore for a living.
Have you found that transition really tough? Like, to,
yeah, for a couple of years.
Yeah.
It's been 3 years?
No, this will be my fifth year.
Fifth year.
So we're talking about how, nine.
We're talking about how impressive, it's a different kind of word, but how impressive a guy like Mark Divine is, because he can come out of that world and now be kind and open, and all he wants to do is help people. But a lot of times these individuals struggle just to get back to reality. Like,
I think that's his disguise.
Because you think he's just a raving, just crazy, dangerous man underneath there.
I work as a contractor for Naval Special Warfare, and a lot of my friends do that stuff. And they remind me a lot of professional athletes, a lot of pro football players, that same mentality. And, you know, they get out, and it's kind of, I'm sure, tough to flip the switch and kind of change, and you know, but you never really lose who you are. You can pretend. Then you have a couple beers, and all of a sudden you come ramping out. You know,
I just want to see John walk around Kroger like shopping for diapers for his twin girls, and like all of a sudden that the energy, like the dander stands up, like the testosterone starts serving. He feels the need to punch something. But no, you're buying diapers right now, dude. Everything's cool.
Little girls are almost potty trained, and that's ironic because
I'm not there yet.
My little girl shit in her pants this morning. And my wife was like, "You're going to go to diapers." She's like, "I'm not going back to diapers." You know, as we throw that underwear away, you know, because the underwear is like a nickel. I mean, the underwear is actually cheaper than the diaper. I'm like, "Don't go back to diapers. That shit's expensive."
I'm still trying to get mine out of that phase into, I can train a lot better once they can wipe their own asses. I'm waiting for that day. I'm still a couple years away, man. Jeez.
My one little girl was, as soon as we showed her like big kid underwear, she's like, "I'm in." And she was potty trained from that day forward. She just wanted to wear big kid underwear.
No.
She didn't want to wear diapers, wanted to have like cool girly underwear. Mother daughter was like, "No way, I'm not doing
it." So how are you going to handle it so that there may already be a sign that they're driven and they have a little bit of the Wilburn fire, competitive, they're going to be athletic?
My little girl, my youngest one, when I say the youngest, she's like a minute younger. She came out second. She is so focused. We go to gymnastics and she's got her little like leotard on. She's like the demo girl. She comes home and practices everything. She works on her like... you know, skin the cats, and she can do all these movements. And then we work on, this is so crazy, we actually run sprints in the hall. So every night before dinner, they start down the hall and they run back and forth. And when they run, I have to like pick them up and throw them up Patrick Swayze, Dirty Dancing style. Yeah. So they run and they jump and I throw them up, I catch them and they go back. And so we do this and it's like sprints and they'll do like 10 or 20 sprints.
Because it's very interesting. Their normal is very different than other kids' normal.
Yeah.
Daddy is just, this is just our daddy. He's big, but that's dad. And they're going to look to you and mimic what you've done in your path. And they're going to want to get serious about sport. But how are you going to approach raising them? Like how would you maybe, knowing what you know and coaching as much as you coach, how would you guide them?
When I went back and, so when I found out my wife was pregnant. So my wife can not only compete in the games, she also, was a, you know, All-American soccer player. And so she came from a real solid background. So when we found out we were having kids, I actually called up Dr. Romanoff and a couple other Russian sports scientists that I knew. And Angel Spazov wrote a bunch of stuff. And I got all this great information about, you know, what you have to get doing. So like day one, giving them, you know, most people keep the baby swaddled, the idea of getting them to crawl. So this is so crazy. We actually made these crawling tracks. So they were actually pieces of wood with sides that were all kind of like foamed up. And the kids would crawl for when they were like a few days old. In these crawling tracks, so we got them moving.
I've already fucked up. We've been swaddling our baby.
Yeah, and then like just some really like kind of heady stuff. And I also, this is also kind of just random, but when I was in Philadelphia, I got invited to be the keynote speaker. Are you guys sweating too? It's fucking hot out here.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I don't sweat.
You don't sweat? Okay.
No.
You just born without sweat glands.
like a dog.
I was invited.
You know, sweat's on his nose.
I was invited to be the keynote speaker for this school in Philadelphia. It was out in Westchester, and it was for you know, special kids. And these kids were obviously you know, had, you know, severe learning disabilities and, you know, many mental handicapped, and they would come to this school, and the school would actually take them as wards, and the parents would sign over custody to the school, and the parents wouldn't come back for years.
Oh, shit.
And the school would raise the children. And they worked with these kids, I mean, severely messed up kid, I mean, problem children in terms of like mental illness and what I mean. So I get to go be the keynote speaker for their graduation, and I get up and I listen to these like harrowing tales of these parents dropping their kids off. And now here they are, like this school was so advanced, like 10 years later, they're, you know, can live in society and they're normal. So the guy who developed the program gets up and he starts talking about me as a professional athlete, and he's reading my whole bio. And I all of a sudden became like so insecure almost that he would talk about my achievements in the face of what these people achieved.
Yeah.
Like it was one of those things where I was just like shrinking in my chair, and I got up. I'm like, I've never been so embarrassed that this guy would make, you know, something cool of after what I listened to. So they had a whole deal about working with children that had severe brain injuries. Like a kid drowns in the pool and he comes out and he's like brain dead. So they send him to this school, and these people have this whole protocol about helping the kid develop consciousness. I called these people and got all their books, and they talked about like movement and, you know, but before the age of six, physical intelligence is the same as mental intelligence. So parents, what do? They put the kid in front and let him watch, you know, educational shows. Well, you got to develop their physical at the same level. So things like getting him to move. I mean, we just started this whole movement deal. We got rid of our dining room table and we put a jungle gym in our family room. So the kids play in the jungle gym. And, you know, last night, or we were rebuilding our backyard to do more stuff with it and just trying to build these, you know, rock climbing walls and just give them every opportunity. But they go to gymnastics, swim, dance, anything I can put them in. And when I looked at all the Russian stuff, that's what they did. It was dance, it was gymnastics, it was movement, things that taught rhythm and flexibility.
Just make them be as human as possible for a little while, I guess. Yeah. And everything else takes care of itself. We do that.
Yeah, and I figure I can like fool them into anything at this age. So they've eaten like the most perfect diet you could ever imagine. So like we've like completely fooled them. The only thing my wife is kind of...
They don't know that McDonald's exists.
No, no. The only thing they've had is they have this coconut ice cream that my wife's convinced them is real ice cream. It's like coconut milk ice cream.
Well, I've heard parents say, they go, you know, oh, but we'll just wait till you put them in school, then they're going to have the McDonald's. You're not going to be able to protect them forever and all that.
So they
What's
go to
your
way,
opinion on people who make those statements?
Maybe when they get a little older.
I don't have kids, so I can sound like a real asshole sometimes when I talk about other people's kids, because I honestly, on the front end, I have no idea what I'm talking about.
So our kids go to a Montessori school, which is kind of like a, you know, kind of special advanced school, I guess you could say. But my wife makes their lunch, and then the teachers know that they have to eat their lunch, that they can't share lunches.
Mm.
So that's a big deal. So we like makes her lunch, and my wife, she'll post pictures on Instagram of her lunch, and I'm just like, damn it, can I get a lunch? She's like, no, the kids get lunches.
Well, what if they see a commercial with McDonald's and they got the toy?
They would never. I mean, they've never eaten anything like that. I think they had In-N-Out Burger once, which isn't really
junk. These are all the arguments that get thrown at me.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I just crushed two double animal style burgers last night, like at 3 o'clock in the morning.
So yeah, my dog loves In-N-Out. Like we'll go to In-N-Out, and he's in the back seat, and the lady always get meat patties, and like he pulls up, and I like put the back window down. He's trying to jump in the takeout window, and he kills In-N-Out. Loves it. So like that's like the favorite food of the pit bull is the In-N-Out.
Oh damn!
I feed my lab paleo. Maybe I'm messing up here.
No, I mean
In-N-Out's where's that?
I'm big on the paleo stuff. Yeah. I mean, but like the raw food, he doesn't dig on the raw food so much. So I got to at least heat it up a little.
Oh really?
Yeah. For some reason, those of you listeners out there that have pit bulls, my pit bull is extremely, and I've had three of them, they're all picky eaters.
Yeah.
And I've tried everything with them. They like knock over. I think they're like super smart dogs, so they're like, I'm not eating the same thing 2 days in a row. That's been something else on there.
I did the raw thing for a while, but it just got to be a pain in the ass. Yeah. Especially when I'm traveling all the time, because now I got to get someone else to do it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, the wife. I don't want to do that. I just want kibble. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
Well, so we went back to like the grain-free kibble and all that kind of stuff, but like, yeah, I think the dog, I had a couple of dogs and we were feeding them the raw diet, and I think they looked a lot better.
You think they did?
They stayed lean. They started looking wild.
Yeah.
Like they were getting enough food. It wasn't like they were like thin, but it was like, it's like your dogs look kind of wild. Like something was happening with their fur. The look on their face was a little more aggressive.
They're going
like,
primal.
I really liked it. I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. But like, and that's a lab.
Yeah.
That lab looks wild. But I think they look, you know, dogs look different. They've been on raw for a few months.
Yeah, we'll still give my dog raw bones. But like for the most part, we kind of, you know, whatever we eat, we just kind of cut up the meat and I give him leftovers and a little bit of the dry food and try to vary his stuff up.
Yeah.
But yeah, he'll get some raw bones. He's pretty hilarious.
We've covered football, kids.
You want to go paleo? We have hardcore fucking hardcore weaponized
cars.
Paleo chat right now.
Cars. We got to talk about cars.
Yeah, guns and cars is all that's left.
Guns, cars, and paleo. American fucking dream, baby.
Next thing you'd be like, beards and bacon. if I saw one more shirt that had to do with beards. It was like beards, bacon, and badass. It was like, dude, you can't make that many connections with beards and bacon. I mean, unless it's beards and bacon, but I didn't see that yesterday.
That's it. It'll pop up tomorrow. New apparel company. Go for it.
Yeah, fucking love it. Beer. So, paleo beer.
If we could come up with paleo beer, then it would work out perfect. All right. We're going to wrap this up. John, where if people want to find you, if they want to check out CrossFit Football, where should they go?
CrossFitFootball.com. And then also you can find me at PowerAthleteHQ.com and or JohnWellborn.com.
Perfect.
Yeah, dude. Make sure to check out Power Athlete Radio, man. We were on that for
episode 50.
Yeah, a little back and forth. It was a good time, man.
Yeah,
we dig the whole fucking Power Athlete crew and CrossFit Football crew. I think CrossFit Football is one of the better things. If you want to get big and strong, and CrossFit is not just quite your cup of tea, and you want to make sure that whoever's giving you the advice knows what the fuck they're talking about, you can't go wrong, dude. I'm serious. You can't go wrong with checking out CrossFit Football. Just do the one thing you should not do. Do the one thing you can't overlook, and just make sure you do the training that's right for you, man. If you're a fucking beginner, just accept it and embrace it, and you're going to be strong as shit before you know it.
Yeah. No, everybody comes and they see professional, well, that's where I should start. And you're like, no, start at the beginning. That's a tough
stuff. Yeah.
Just ask yourself what you are, bro. What are you, man? Really?
Try beginner, and when the progress stops, then bump.
Yeah. Well, and the other one too is people always ask me, how will I know? I'm like, you'll fucking know because you won't ask me or asking me. So I remember T Nation asked me to write an article about how I know I'm a beginner. And I basically sent him back because you're reading fucking T Nation. And the guy was like, could you make it longer? I'm like, well, you want me to say it twice? So needless to say, I didn't write the article for them. And I remember looking at their demographics and it was the same demographics as CrossFit. So I remember being like, wait a minute, you guys bash CrossFit. And now you see they're fucking sucking CrossFit's dick. like that Christian Thibodeau just posted a whole thing about he's been this closet CrossFitter the whole time. And really he invented, I mean, I'm just like, oh my God, dude.
Here we go
again.
It's
because they got the same demographics and they're realizing CrossFit's kicking their ass.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, the best supplement for CrossFit is Surge and Power and Purge and all these other. And I'm like, come on, dude.
Purge.
I'm like, you know, I realize T Nation's a big front for Biotest and that's great. But I mean, come on, dude, you've got to make it like a little less obvious. You know?
Yeah. You reminded me of like the one thing. Like, I got this question and I want to know if something's right for me. Is it like where there is doubt, there's no doubt. It's probably not right for you. Go back. When it's obvious to you, then you'll know.
Like, you are so wise.
That's a little bit of a Zen thing. It was like, dude, if you have doubt about it, should I use bands for squats? Probably not. Probably not if you're asking. Go back and just do more regularly.
Well, my big deal is, can you use bands? People always like, oh, should I? I'm like, well, can you? I'm like, well, I don't have bands. I'm like, well, then you can't. Like, we had a big one. This guy wanted to know all about this chains and do this and the chains. I'm like, well, can you use chains? He's like, well, I could, but I don't have them. I'm like, are you going to buy chains? He's like, well, I don't know where to get them. I'm like, well, then why the fuck are we talking about this? You know? It's like, you know.
Let's start with the fundamentals of human dialogue. What can you do?
Yes.
Things you can't do, don't do.
Well, I mean,
do the things you can do.
You know, like I had a guy be like, oh, you know, I could squat 1,000 pounds if I had a belt squat machine.
Like, no.
I'm like, are you going to get a belt squat machine? He's like, well, no. I'm like, well, then why are we having this fucking conversation? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills sometimes.
All right, we're going to wrap this up. Make sure you head over to barbellshrug.com sign up for the newsletter.
Don't throw anything else his way or we'll keep talking.
I know, I think this will go on forever. But we're going to have to have a second show later on.
It'll come.
Most definitely.
Episode 2 is coming.
Well, I'm not a talker and you guys aren't either. So it's, you know, it's like pulling teeth, which is, you know.
No bullshit here.
Bullshit free zone, ladies and gentlemen.
That's the next shirt we need. This is a bullshit free zone, Barbell Shrug.
I heard the sarcasm in that one.
Oh, good. I finally connected.
Goodbye, everybody. See you next time.